We'll survive the promised land. Just tying my closing statements in with the previous sermons. And I hope you are able to extricate yourself from the promised land, children. We've got to get out of this passivity. You got to leave the screen and stop big oil. And we're not doing it right now. We've got to. We're out of time. You know that. I'm just saying what everybody's saying, but nobody's doing. Well, the earth is conscious. The earth is a living being. That's how we'll be able to do this, I believe. The earth's story will take us back to that wilderness that we're crossing, that personal wilderness that we have inside of us. The earth will give us that back. We'll be aware of how we are the earth, too. When we get that, then we don't have to be brave or afraid or angry or careerist or heroic or anything, any of that. We won't have any barriers. It'll be easy to be crazy. It'll be a privilege to be over the top. For ourselves, for the earth, for the loving earth. Amen. Somebody give me an hallelujah.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer Robin Friend. His show, Bastard Countryside, is on now at Blue Sky Gallery through May 27th. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Robin.
Thanks for having me. Hey.
So you live in England, and you've come over here to Blue Sky.
Yeah, I do. I live in England, down south, and I've just come over to set up the show, and I'm flying back home on Sunday.
So it's based on a book you did 2018 called Bastard Countryside.
Yeah, yeah. So Loose Joints published the book in 2018. But it took me 15 years to complete the series. It was a very slow burner. And it wasn't until I got the title, Bastard Countryside, which is this Victor Hugo quote from Les Miserables, that the project sort of began to take shape, and I was able to sort of visualize it as a complete project.
Mm-hmm. So it's color, large format photography. No frames or glass, just pinned to the wall. And the kind of basic concept is, well, tell us about what Victor Hugo said about the battle,
sure.
What you find in landscape.
So when he coined the phrase, he was thinking of Paris, the city, being this serpent, this sort of amphibian that was spilling out into the countryside and devouring everything and spitting it out to create these hybrid sites that weren't city, weren't countryside, but a mishmash of both. And that really sort of appealed to me, because I grew up in Australia and England, backwards and forwards. And when I returned to England to live fully when I was about 14, I picked up a camera and started looking for these sites that kind of reminded me of the Australian landscape, but were really these sort of hybrid sites that didn't have a sort of fully formed identity, I should say. I mean, there's a few things going on in the project, but one of the main subjects is a sort of battlefield where we're in a fight with nature. So it's humanity versus the natural world, and it's ebbing and flowing, this battle. Sometimes humans have the upper hand, and sometimes it's the natural world that's taking over.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of, these are scenes where things are often overgrown or destroyed, or you know, falling apart on their own. One of the key images is called Birch and Steel, and it's a electricity pylon, you know, a tower, and in front of it is a silver birch tree slightly goldenish leaves, like autumnal gray sky. I mean, there's the horizon is the last 5% of the image at the bottom. And then the wires come in from the left and they seem to go into the tree. So the tree is like blocking, partially blocking this view of this kind of, you know, three-armed kind of robot, you know.
Well, it's a good example of that hybrid site I was talking about. It's a new thing. It's not nature, it's not humans, it's this new site, because they've splattered into each other to create this sort of sculptural object that's neither beautiful or ugly.
There is a diptych, which is three radar dishes that have fallen on the ground in a field, that kind of a purple-looking field. I don't know, is that lavender or is that just the color of the grass?
It's a bit of both, I think, but yeah, gauzy, lavendery. I've sort of pushed the colors a little bit. Although it was shot on film, shot on large format, I would drum scan the negatives to a really high resolution, and then I can push and pull the colors. A little bit like you would in the dark room, and some are pushed more than others. Often I actually take color out more than anything. And so it's slightly manipulated.
So, sorry, it's four dishes, but they're composed in an interesting way. So you have these two giant square prints, almost square.
Four or five, yeah. Close to square.
But you just kind of took one of the left of the three dishes, and then the one on the right is one dish with a little bit of one of the other dishes.
Sliver, yeah.
So you just kind of move the camera across?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I was sort of perched on this sort of fence, and it was the only way I could get enough purchase and get back enough to take it all in with the lens that I had. And it's an old radar site, and so these four radars would have been used in World War II and during the Cold War. And I shot this in 2016, I believe, and then a few years later they were scrapped, so they're no longer there. And they would have once been on these really tall tripod legs, so they'd have been hovering in the sky. But it's, yeah, for me it goes back to this idea of this sort of anxious nature. They're very strange sculptures that just sort of feel like they've come from, you know, this otherworldly place.
And you've got cows just grazing around them, and
which add to the sort of surreal nature. I mean, we all know that cows and the beef industry is a real issue. I don't want to ram these stories down people, you know, these issues down people's throats, but within all the images there's a, you know, this anxious nature, and these ideas of how we're leaving the planet to future generations, you know. And when I started making this project in 2003, obviously we knew about climate change and you know, how we're destroying the planet, but it's only in the last, I think, decade or so that everyone now is really conscious of these issues. You know, before it's
harder to deny, so now people have different positions, you know, while sort of basically agreeing that things are going to hell.
Well, you can just see it outside, can't you? I mean, the seasons are all messed up, and, you know, there's snow here, isn't there, in the winter, I'm sure. It's going to be less and less over the next decade or so.
You have one smaller image of a scarecrow, and the scarecrow has a kind of red face made of rags and this white boiler suit, and then the arms are tied, but there's a kind of looks like a baby sling in dark green around the scarecrow's neck. Tell us a story of that, because you did shoot some other scarecrows.
Yeah, there's a whole series of these. There's four or five in the book, and they sort of mark the book in sort of chapter form. They sort of mark as chapters. And what I really like about this picture is, I mean, scarecrows were originally designed to control or manipulate the natural surroundings. So they're obviously supposed to keep the birds at bay from eating the crops. There's also some greenhouses that appear, dilapidated greenhouses that appear in the book, and they're almost the opposite. They're again designed to create this temperature, this season, to, you know, trick the plants into growing quicker. But the broken up ones in the book have nature growing back and ivy growing through and fighting back. What I like about this picture is how it's positioned next to the sperm whale piece, which obviously has a lot of blood in the sea, and just in terms of palate and the conversation between the people and this poor whale.
Scarecrow's kind of white coat, and then there's all this shattered rock on the shore. So you're up on a promontory looking down at this beached whale, and it looks like whale, more like whaling, you know, because there's so much blood in the water. There's a sunken boat in the background, and two women are out looking at the whale. One's like touching its nose, its front of its face. Where was this? When did this happen?
So this was in 2016, and it was up in Norfolk at a place called Hunstanton.
So that's East England, East Anglia.
That's right,
The kind of round, bumpy bit where nothing happens.
Yeah, and so it was a whole pod that had sadly got beached, some further up the coast. And I think, I'm not 100% sure what happened, but I think their sonar was scrambled. And this is, again, a sign of the times. I think we're seeing more and more whales get beached. It was a really sort of poignant moment with these, like you said, these two ladies going up to it. Well, they were umming and ahhing, should we go up to it? And eventually one did. But yeah, funnily enough, I'd actually written in this book a few months before that I needed a beached whale. The series sort of felt like it needed something like that, and lo and behold, I don't know if it was serendipity or the opposite of that, but anyway, this thing happened. So I've always felt kind of bad about that.
There's another one that is straight up building on it's a beautifully orange building. It's a mixture of red brick and then some kind of red stone or cement. One building is round, the other is very boxy, kind of almost looks like Lego. It's kind of glowing on a grey, cloudy sky in front of water. And then the foreground is this very lumpy, kind of rocky shoreline. You know, it's very wet. Looks like it has really old train tracks in it. And it just stands there in the center. It looks very alien. I mean, I could never work out what it's for. And I don't think I've ever seen a picture of it before either.
Yeah, so what we're looking at is a grain tower. It's called the Grain Tower, and it was originally made in the 1850s as it was going to house a gun on top of it and keep the French navy at bay, in theory. But by the time they finished completing it, the gun technology had moved on, so it was never actually used for that purpose. And then fast forward a few hundred years, you have World War II, and it was then added to, and that's why you've got these very two different structures. And then it was again used as this military site. This is a good example of where I've taken color away to make the picture pop more. So the foreground would have been completely red as well, because it was at the sort of, you know, last moments of the sun going down. Mm-hmm. And by taking the red out of the foreground, it becomes more surreal, and you can't quite figure out, you know, how it's done.
So they have these beautiful reflections that reflect the sky and then the red building itself. Did you have to leave the red in there?
Yeah, exactly. So I left it in the water.
How do you do that? Is that just Photoshop?
Just painting away in Photoshop.
Yeah.
So making a mask and then taking out.
And this is on the Thames estuary. So where the Thames enters the North Sea.
That's right.
It's very wide and kind of marshy in places, and there's not much there, a lot of old industry and stuff.
Yeah, the sort of, it's very otherworldly in many ways. It's just, it's a strange sight. You know, it almost feels, yeah, not, could be somewhere in space, you know.
Mm-hmm. How do you get your big, large format camera out there without trashing it?
I mean, they packs up quite small, the camera that I had. Even though it was 5.4, it was a field camera. So it actually fits into a rucksack.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just got the tripod in your arms.
And you walk
away
out
you
there?
Go. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How far do you have to walk?
I think it's about the actual tower's 500 meters or so out.
Okay.
Depending on the tides.
How much kind of scouting does it take to get something like this? I mean, are people just Instagramming your ideas?
Well, it was sort of made before the days of, the project was made before the days of Instagram. I started in 2003. So a lot of it was intuition, walking, you hear about something, get in the car, just follow your nose. And then as you build up the series and get more images, you start seeing the gaps and the spaces. And that's when you maybe do a bit more research. And obviously, yeah, now you have the internet, and that's a very good, very good resource.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is photographer Robin Friend. His show, Bastard Countryside, is on now at Blue Sky Gallery through May 27th. There are three big dark images on the wall that sort of is on the street side. And I think the most stunning one of all is called Gerwin. It's a slate mine where people are just throwing a load of old cars in. It's just such an incredible photograph because it looks like a painting. You have to get really close to see that these battered old cars are actually, you know, real cars. So just tell us a bit about the way you set the shot up first.
Yeah, so this is a tricky picture to make, and it took me a few attempts. So it's in this huge old slate quarry, and what we had to do is we had to abseil down the cliff face and then set up an inflatable boat, pump the boat up, remove a lot of the detritus that was in the foreground. Because had that been there, it would have ruined that sort of mirrored reflection because it was a really long exposure. So once we moved that out of the way, I opened up the aperture and painted with light, which is essentially just moving a torch around. But it's an incredibly powerful torch, which had been designed by an engineer because it's such a big space to light. And then you've got this crack on the top left side of the quarry, and that is allowing some natural light to come in as well. And for me, it was almost like this Renaissance sort of Baroque lighting that was coming down and going, to the human waste, which is all these cars and washing machines and crap essentially piled up on each other like a rusty waterfall.
Yeah, so you've got the light come from above is natural, and then you're waving a big flashlight around, like a super bright LED.
Yeah, sort of just filling in the foreground.
And you've got the shutter open for 4 minutes.
Roughly, I mean, yeah, it was 3 or 4 minutes. I wasn't timing it, but yeah, it took. I mean, the first attempt, we went back to London, and I hadn't really got the picture at all, so we had to drive 7-8 hours back to North Wales and give it another go.
Yeah.
But it was at a time when I was getting despondent with photography, and it felt too easy. And that's why I searched out these underground spaces, because I wanted to make it as hard as possible to make a picture. And we all know that light is the main, you know, the essential ingredient of photography in many ways. And by removing light, it made it much harder to make an image, so, which was something that I needed at the time, because I was losing the faith, but yeah, and it led me onto some really interesting projects by going underground and meeting these these people that, you know, love looking after these old mines and...
Oh, yeah, caves and stuff.
Yeah.
So the person who owned this land, this private land, they just allowed people to chuck things down the hole?
It's unclear, but it is private land, and you can make out the number plates, and some of the number plates are sort of 50, 60 years old, so it's obviously been going on for a long time. I mean, it might have just been one person doing it, you know, but it was just a very strange thing to find, really.
So they call that fly tipping in England, don't they?
Yes.
Here it's called driving out to the Mount Hood National Forest and dumping your mattress over the side of the road.
It goes on everywhere. Yeah, I mean, it's a sort of sign of the times, unfortunately. It's that idea, out of sight, out of mind, you know, which isn't the way to be thinking about things, you know.
And the slate is just incredible. I mean, this looks like a Terry Todemeyer picture of the landscape here where the shows several eons, you know. A guy who kind of really loved geology.
Mm.
You've sort of captured that in this, I don't know, with a torch.
I mean, yeah, there's something really appealing about slate. Particularly in this part of the world, you have purple slate, which I think is sought after when it comes to building. And it has all these different hues when the light catches it. It's a really beautiful texture.
Mm-hmm. Right next to that is a picture from a sewer in Sheffield under the railway station, and it's black. Most of the ground as it is this bubbly kind of black stuff. And then there's a big kind of diamond-shaped hole, which is full of pink and blue light, as far as I can tell. And then at the top, there's curved brickwork. Tell us what this is.
So it's an old Victorian sewer, essentially, and back then they made things proper. But what we're actually looking at is upside down. I composed at large format, and so with a large format camera, you see on the glass plate the image upside down, and as soon as I'd seen that, I was like, right, that's the way I want to present this picture. Because it has this, again, a real otherworldly presence. And it appears in the book towards the end, like a lot of the underground pictures do. So it's almost like the finale of the book. And I think, it's almost like we're going down this into this sort of world, and we don't know where we're going to come out. I was waist deep in water. I don't think it was. It's not a real sewer. No, it's not used as a sewer anymore. Thank God.
Mm-hmm.
We had to. It's underneath Sheffield train station, and so the light that you see is actually ground level.
Mm-hmm. So the light is coming from the street, but you've flipped it so that it looks like a hole, and it kind of reminds me of the end of Don Giovanni, where he's the opera where he's pulled underground. It looks like we're looking into hell in a kind of a way, but it's kind of a nice pastel hell.
Yeah. Well, it comes before the image we were just talking about, Gerwin, and so in many ways, that is a kind of hell. This sort of, underland, underworld, where all the crap that we've got rid of over the course of human time is exists. It's not a place you want to be.
Mm-hmm. One more image over here. The third of those is just a very black field with some little plants growing in it and a kind of white stripe in the background. It's just very different from all the others.
Yeah, this was Wanstead Flats, which was just on the periphery of London.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a fire that broke out there on this nature reserve. And, we all know human-caused fires are becoming more and more prevalent, and that's because we've destroyed nature in many ways, and I mean, particularly in America, we're getting every year around these parts, we're seeing more and more huge fires. So it was something that I knew that had to be represented in Bastard Countryside. And again, it reminds me of my childhood in Australia in many ways. You'd have this kind of landscape a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think that the white line, the perfect white line at the top, it's very much the human-made element in this picture.
Is that like a footpath?
I think it must be, yeah, it would have been. And obviously the fires jumped it. Kind of odd, and what you have in the foreground is, in these plants, tangled up is this sort of bit of tin foil, I think.
Oh, is that what that is?
Which almost looks like it's part of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you know, it's always about, in the Bastard Countryside, the confusion of the human and the natural and how it's all tangled up and messy.
Mm-hmm. What's the litter situation over there right now?
In the UK? It depends where you go, really. I mean, Lewes, where I live, it's not too bad, but you can just go out on the downs, which are these sort of hills that are, they're a national park. And you'll come across all sorts of crap, mattresses and, you know.
But what jungle. About, like, a kid walking down the street with a pack of sweets and they finish with them? What would they just chuck it on the floor?
Honestly, it depends on the kid, you know. I mean, we moved out of London a few years ago, and obviously, you know, big cities are always going to be more messy than, you know, smaller towns near the countryside.
Have you had a look around Portland?
I have. I went for a nice walk yesterday when the sun was actually shining, and unlike today, unfortunately. But no, it's a great city. It's I've seen a lot of good galleries. Went to the most amazing bookshop in the world yesterday, Powell's. Lost a few hours there. But it's been great, yeah.
What do you think of the landscape, the urban landscape? I mean, there's a lot of trash on the street, but does anything else jump out about you? Is your photographer's eye sort of activated here?
It is. I mean, what I find fascinating always when you come to these more modern cities is the grid system and how that just doesn't exist in English towns or cities. You know, it's all windy and higgledy-piggledy in comparison. So I always find that really interesting, the blocks and, you know, go down. People talk about blocks, and that's how you navigate these places. The architecture is really interesting. There's a lot of good street art, and it's the people that really stand out, because I think people are different by design in different places, you know, in different parts of the world. So it's more about the people watching for me here.
Do you shoot people with large format?
You know, I don't really, to be honest. In the Apiary project that I've just done, there are people in that, whereas in Bastard Countryside, there's only two pictures with people in. And that's a comment on... I mean, Bastard Countryside is also about this sort of post-apocalyptic world in many ways, and it's almost looking towards setting the future, this landscape in the future where there aren't going to be many people. But no, I don't really shoot that many people, if I'm honest. Although I'm working on a new project that might change that, but that's for another time.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Robin Friend. His photography show, Bastard Countryside, is on now at Blue Sky Gallery in the Pearl through May 27th. Thanks very much for taking the time to do Art Focus, Robin.
Thanks, Joseph. Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Andy walking, Andy tired. Andy take a little snooze. Tie him up when he fast asleep. Send him on a pleasant cruise.
When you wake up on the sea, you're sure to think of me and you. To think about paint and to think about glue, what a jolly boring thing to do.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
Está sintonizando KDOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KDOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 9 de mayo del 2023. La emergencia pública mundial causada por el COVID-19 puede haber terminado oficialmente, pero la pandemia seguirá con nosotros por muchos años. Tampoco está claro que los gobiernos hayan aprendido lo suficiente del brote como para estar preparados para luchar contra los nuevos microbios emergentes que podrían desencadenar calamidades peores. Estas son las crudas conclusiones de los científicos que reaccionaron a la noticia de la semana pasada de que la Organización Mundial de la Salud ya no considera el COVID-19, que ha matado a más de 7 millones de personas,